Hello and welcome to the Innovation Agency podcast. This episode comes from our Coaching Academy and features Juliet Kumar exploring one of the most important factors in delivering safe care, psychological safety.
Hi, my name's Juliet Kumar. I'm the Associate Director for Improvement in Education at the Innovation Agency, and I'm here to talk to you all about psychological safety and why it's really, really important. And the reason that I am talking to you about psychological safety is that for me, I've worked in many organisations over my career, and for me, it's something that is really important to be present in the workplace, to be present in the teams that you work with. Without psychological safety, we don't get the best out of our people, and we don't make the places we work the safest places to be. So, what is psychological safety? So, psychological safety was first coined by Professor Amy Edmondson of Harvard, and she back in 2003-ish, she did a study into safety in medicines administration. So she looked at a number of teams. She sent out her qualitative researchers to observe and interview a number of teams who were charged with medication administration. And what they came back with was kind of the opposite of what she thought she was going to find, and that was that actually the safest teams were those which had the most reported number of medicine errors. So it was a converse of what she thought. So safer teams had higher reported medical errors, and they wanted to find out why that was. She thought that actually the safest teams would be the teams who didn't report, had the lowest number of medical errors. But actually what was happening when the researchers went in was that teams who felt they were able to admit mistakes or near misses or who were working in environments where learning was a predominant process, they knew that if they admitted that something nearly happened or something went wrong, that it would be seen as an opportunity to learn, and that it wouldn't be seen as a kind of there wouldn't be a punitive reaction to what had happened. People would be held accountable, but equally the whole goal of the work environment was to learn how to get things better and to get things safer for people. So actually, the teams that they were looking at who had more reported incidents were actually safer teams, and she could say that. And she came up with this term that the teams actually felt psychologically safe, that if they came up with an idea or if they were about to call out a near miss, that they wouldn't be shot down, there wouldn't be anything punitive happening to them, they wouldn't be ridiculed. So they felt really safe to challenge and to call out where things nearly happened or where things might have happened. So the actual reporting went up. Teams that were less safe were teams who really hid things and kept things hidden from show. So if there was a near miss, they wouldn't report it. And that was largely because people didn't feel safe. They felt if they did call out what was happening or the near miss, that they would receive some kind of punitive action against them, or their card would be marked, for example, or they might be ridiculed or spoken to harshly in front of team members, that kind of thing. So what she called that was psychological safety. If we had psychological safety, teams felt they were able to speak up. So it was really, really important. And that work kind of has carried on over the last 20 years. And actually, it wasn't until 2016 when Google went on a quest to find the highest performing teams in their organisation. They set up a project called Project Aristotle. And they sent some researchers out to find, well, who are the highest performing teams in our organisation and what are the characteristics of those high performing teams and how do we replicate that across the organisation? How do we build that model of high performing teams? So what they found, they sent some researchers out to study those high performing teams, and they came back with this sense of the best performing teams were teams that were able to speak up, to offer ideas without being shut down, and there was a high sociability among team members, and fundamentally there was a lot of trust that they wouldn't be thrown under the bus if something went wrong, that they would see problems as learning opportunities. And you know, it wasn't until, so they came up with this phenomena. And they saw Amy Edmondson's work and they went, psychological safety, that's what that is. So number one in high performing teams is what Google found was also psychological safety. So research is starting to come out around this this concept. So the other thing that Google found, so they found five determinants that they in their model, and number one was psychological safety. Number two is dependability. So dependability meant that actually if you said you were going to do something, you would do it. So team members felt that they could rely on each other to do what they committed to do, and they would do it to high standards. So they had dependability. The third thing was that they had structure and clarity. So each member of the team knew their objectives and they had the resources to do them. So they were able to carry out their work and they were very clear about what it was they were doing. The fourth thing they found was that they had meaning to their work. So they were motivated by more than just the paycheck at the end of the month. So the team were motivated by a sense of shared purpose and values of the team. So there was an intrinsic motivation to do good or to improve, somehow improve the world that they're living in. And I think in healthcare, which is my industry, we've got bags of that. We're motivated by helping the people that we look after. And then the fifth thing that they found was visible impact. So they found that the team were able to, had the opportunity to see the fruits of their labour, if you like, and how their piece of work contributed to a bigger picture. And I really like that one because that really links to what Edward Deming says around, you know, don't rob people of the right to pride in their workmanship, because actually that's a really great intrinsic motivator. So if you can see the results of the efforts that you put in and how that contributes more widely, you're more likely to you know, perform well. So that was what Google had found in their high performing teams. But both Amy Edmondson and the Google teams, you know, one thing that was within a key component of psychological safety is the teams being able to trust one another. It's a real fundamental building block of working with other people, it's fundamental to everything that we do. And relational trust is really as much about what we do as what we say. So four areas of trust we can think about as respect, really respecting each other, genuinely listening and valuing what each other have got to contribute, and really listening and respecting through even social discourse that takes place across the team, that we have personal integrity. So we, you know, if we say we're going to do something, we do it, and then we are competent in the things that we're responsible for. And that, importantly, that means that we don't work out with our competencies, because that can break trust. And the other thing about trust is that, you know, often it's we have what's coined as personal regard for our team members. So that's a willingness of a team member to go above and beyond what their role might formally require. So that might be that, you know, if you can see someone's busy and you're going out to get some lunch, you might say, "Oh, I see you're really busy. Do you want me to grab you a sandwich, because I'm going to the canteen?" And you know, so it's kind of like looking out for each other above and beyond our roles and responsibilities within the job. So and I also think about when I was a nurse, and you know, if I was finishing up at the end of a shift had my work done and had written up my notes, but I could see another nurse who was still carrying out care duties, I might say to her, you know, "Shall I take over while you write up your notes so that everybody gets off on time?" So you're kind of looking out for each other, that personal regard. And that's really important for building trust and building good team environments. So Psychological safety is really important in work environments, and I've worked in areas where I've felt really psychologically safe, and in those areas I have given 110%, I've thrived, I've learned, I've really enjoyed my work, I've loved my work. I've also worked in places where there was no psychological safety, and I very quickly left those places. So I just, for me, it's, I can't work anywhere where I can't be myself, speak up, call things out when I see them, you know, and really work to be my best self at work and do the best for the people that we look after. The other thing that Amy Edmondson talks about is there's no trade-off between having a psychologically safe working environment and having high standards. So to say that, you know, psychological safety isn't a safe space, it's not anything goes. It's, you know, you can have psychological safety, but you can be held to account for delivering high standards of performance in what you're doing. So it's really, you know, a bit of a, there shouldn't be any tension between those two things. So I've worked in environments where I've had high accountability, so there's high performance pressure, where people are expecting you to deliver and to deliver to high standard. But also in those, if you're in an environment like that, but you have low psychological safety, what you have is a very anxious working environment, and people are kind of motivated by fear. So they're driven by fear, fear and vulnerability and anxiety. And that's the predominant feelings in those work environments. And that's not a good place to be. People burn out, people leave, you get lots of churn. So where you have in work environments where you have high psychological safety and high accountability, really what you can create there is, I feel safe to speak out and to call things out as I see them, but I'm also being held to high standards. And what you get in that space is really the learning environment. And that's the ideal spaces. How do we learn together? How do we get better together? And how do I do that by feeling safe to bring problems and to know that we can all swarm around them and give our opinion about a problem. So really the optimal working environment is really high psychological safety, but also high accountability and high standards. So how do we build psychological safety? What can I do? I hear you asking. So there are things. The good news is that you can build psychological safety in your working environments. But a lot of the time it is, you have to examine your own behaviours and what it is you're doing. So you have to be the change you want to see is step one. So how do you encourage others to call out problems, to bring problems to you, to explore problems? So number one is really to show that you're vulnerable, so that by doing that, by saying, actually, I need some help with this, or I haven't quite got this right, you're inviting other people, or you're giving permission to other people to be vulnerable as well and to admit that they might need help. So number one is, you know, as a good leader, is to model vulnerability, but also is to be curious. So ask a lot of questions around of people in your work environment. So, you know, turn work problems into learning opportunities, if you like. And if you frame work as learning problems, you're kind of really inviting people to problem solve with you. So modelling curiosity, asking lots of questions, acknowledging your fallibility, and framing work as learning problems is a really great way to start building psychological safety. And as I said before, there shouldn't be any trade-off between psychological safety and high standards. And Amy Edmondson will talk about it. It's very important to realise that psychological safety is not about it's not about being safe. It's not about being in a safe environment where anything goes. So what we have to bear in mind and what we have to set our standards around is that, you know, there are certain situations where things might not go according to plan, but we also have to ensure that we're taking a measured risk when we're doing things. So there are things where we know things shouldn't go wrong. So if we go onto an aeroplane and turn left. We want to make sure that the pilot's competent, that he knows what he's doing, and he's able to get us to the destination we need to get to. And it's the same in healthcare. If you go into an anaesthetic room, you want to know that you're in safe hands. So if things are going wrong there, it's really, you know, those are preventable and predictable and should be controlled environments. But there are times where we are working in complex organisations, in systems, systems within systems, and you know, it's an actually complex environment, so things will go wrong. Human factors play in and things go wrong, and the only way to improve in those environments is not to a process won't improve that, but a learning process will. So where we have an environment where we're constantly learning, and to do that comes back to the same thing, we need to have psychological safety. It's absolutely fundamental, otherwise we won't be able to learn. So I think I just wanted to just give you some tips, really. What Amy Edmondson talks about in terms of building psychological safety is, do you know what your current team climate is? You probably have a hunch about what it's like working in the team that you're in. Can you speak up? Does someone shoot you down when you're speaking? But it's sometimes bringing awareness of this topic to your team members can really, and giving it that name. I often bring this session to some of our coaching academy programs, and we talk about psychological safety, and often in the room there's a lot of light bulb moments, a lot of aha, that I know what that is, but I've never had a framework or anything to kind of communicate that, and often people really appreciate just having that framework, that language to go back and say, do we have psychological safety in this workplace? It's really important. So even just having the language is great. Amy Edmondson also talks about, you know, if we understand the team climate we're in, there's a number of team climate questionnaires you can do that looks at, some of them have psychological safety in them. If you want to know any more, then do just drop me a line and after the podcast, go to the website and send me a message, and I can share some of those with you and point you in the right direction. But the other thing that Amy talks about is, you know, really setting within your team what they call blameworthy acts. So things that we won't accept. So things like, you know, disrespectful behaviour, being, you know, reckless behaviour, knowingly violating standards. So failing to learn over time. So if you can really be explicit about what those acts are, it really gives people some boundaries to work within. We will call you out if you're doing this, if you're doing that. And that's, you know, that sounds an easy thing to do, but it is quite hard. You know, there's a process behind that where you get people together and you work through those things. So there has to be an element of maturity in the leadership and maturity within the team to be able to do that. So I'm going to just really recap on this kind of things that you can do to build psychological safety, and I'm going to leave you with these. So number one, framework as learning problems as opposed to execution problems. So, you know, really get people to help you solve. Be fun, you know, acknowledge. Number two is acknowledge your own fallibility. It is okay to be vulnerable at work. In fact, it's part of the whole human experience. And there's a lot more research coming out about this now from Brené Brown and colleagues like her, who are bringing this whole human experience and what we bring to work to life, so we can really start to use it. Number three is model curiosity. Ask a lot of questions and ask, don't tell. If you tell someone what to do, you're giving them a solution, you're stopping their thought processes in their tracks. If you ask them what to do, it forces them to really think and learn and go through those motions in their own mind, and you're helping them to build their resilience. Number four is, you know, reward attempts at behaviours that lead to psychological safety. If you see your team members trying to do things to learn or to share a problem, you know, let's start rewarding that. Let's start saying well done. And I think that's really important. And number five, and I think this is really good, and this comes from a guy called Samuel West, who set up the Museum of Failure. He says that we should, you know, it's okay to have a playful work environment. If we have a playful work environment, it really helps us to learn, it helps us to explore, it helps us to experiment, it helps us to move beyond, it really unleashes our creativity. And by being creative, we can come up with new solutions to problems that we've got. So those are the five things that I would encourage you to go out and test, and do read up more about psychological safety. There's lots out there on the internet. I think it's a really interesting subject, and it's something that I think we should all have as number one in our work environment. So I've been Juliette Kumar. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope to see you on one of our coaching programs sometime soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Juliette. There's information about all our coaching courses and other learning opportunities at the website innovationagencynwc.nhs.uk. Thank you for listening.